Support for WPR comes from Viterbo University, offering online bachelor completion programs, including business, education, nursing, and more. Information is available at viterbo.edu/completion.
Support for WPR comes from Wills on behalf of Wisconsin Public Libraries, offering access to ebooks, audiobooks, digital magazines, and more. Available with a Wisconsin Library Card at wisconsinsdigitallibrary.org.
Asian dishes often have a kind of a light and fresh quality I really find appealing. And wouldn't it be nice to introduce some of those flavors and cooking techniques into your everyday cooking? Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We're going to learn about some of the characteristic elements of Asian cuisine today and how you can use them yourself. Ng Compestein is the former longtime editor of Martha Stewart's Body and Soul magazine. She's the author of 15 books for adults and children. Her writing, boy, it appears in places like Self, Eating Well, Cooking Light, Men's Health, and Delicious Living. And she is the author of this great new book. It's called Cooking with an Asian Accent, Eastern Wisdom in a Western Kitchen. Ng, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's wonderful. And as we talk today and our listeners listen in, I'm wondering for them, maybe you have a favorite Asian dish that you prepare. We'd love to maybe hear about that. Or maybe you have a dish that you can make that's best of East and the best of West. I hope you'll tell us about that as well. Certainly, Ng Compestein will be doing that today. Asian food is not only delicious, but when you make it in a traditional way, I think it's pretty healthy too. What in particular makes it good for us?
Well, one thing is we eat according to the season. You know, you harmonize with the nature. So we have this yin and yang balance. So, like, for example, for the spring, welcoming the spring, we'll have some fresh vegetables and the fish. And in the summertime, we'll eat something cooling. In the wintertime, we tend to eat something more substantial, like meat and the stew. And one thing is, you know, when you go to a Chinese restaurant, you rarely see Asian drink cold ice water in the wintertime, or actually any time. We always drink the beverage at the room temperature.
That's interesting. What are some of the preparation techniques that are often used in Asian cuisine that can be adapted more to Western cooking, things that we don't do as much now?
Well, I think the steam, I am just so thrilled to see, you know, there's more and more Western kitchen now have a steam oven. And you don't even need a steam oven. Of course, you could steam on your stovetop. Like, for example, in my book, I have a steamed eggplant with garlic and chopped olives. This is more like an East meet West recipe. In China, my grandmother cooked a lot of steamed dishes. And this is, you know, steamed eggplant was one of my childhood favorites. When back in China, we flavored the steamed eggplant, used the pickled the vegetable.
Yeah.
You know, the recent research show it's not that good for you. Eat a lot of pickled vegetable. They have a very high sodium content, and it's not good. So that's how I incorporate this East and Midwest. I use the chopped olives and the garlic.
Well, I'm telling you, I'm looking through this cookbook. I can't wait to take this cookbook home because there are so many good-looking recipes in this book. And as a matter of fact, I should mention right up front that we've posted that you were nice enough to give us permission to post three recipes that look absolutely wonderful. And I can't wait to try them. It's really going to be fun.
You have to tell me which one's your favorite after you try it.
Well, yeah, definitely. I'll let you know about that. You have a website, by the way.
Yeah. And then there's a steamed fish with spicy ginger sauce. This is a wonderful light dish, you know, for anyone, you know, omega-3 is good for us to eat fish. Mm-hmm. Instead of, you know, you go to a restaurant, a lot of times they deep fry the fish. And
yep.
Or they pan a lot of oil. So this is a very nice, simple, clean way to prepare a delicious dish. You know, also it's not that much you have to do afterwards to clean it up. You don't have the oil splash everywhere.
Well, you know, I have a steamer, and I've used that steamer a lot over the years, and I've used it more for vegetables. If you steam vegetables properly, I mean, they just turn out wonderful.
Yeah, and, you know, you can steam most of the dishes in this book. You can just use a vegetable steamer. Of course, if you don't have that, I sometimes use you put on a plate and you put a bowl underneath the plate and put it inside a big pot, and you cover the pot, and you can steam that way.
Oh, sure, why not? In Compostine, our guest today, as we're talking with her about her book, Cooking with an Asian Accent, Eastern Wisdom in a Western Kitchen. And I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. Do you have a favorite Asian dish that you prepare, or do you combine East and West in some of your cooking? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. So give us a call, go to the Facebook page, or give us an email. Love to hear from you. We have one of the recipes that we put up was the green tea steamed shrimp dumplings. Oh, they look great.
Thank you. Well, it's my son's favorite, and I taught him how to fold in a dumpling when he was 3 years old. And so it's just a wonderful time. This is I always tell people when you cook this dish, don't think about this is something you have to slave in the kitchen by yourself. Invite your families and your friends to come cook with you. It's just a wonderful time to, you know, get together, and one person can make the sauce, the chili garlic dipping sauce. Another person can help make the filling, and then you can all sit down and fold the dumplings together.
Well, and if you're three, if a three-year-old can do it, I could probably do it too.
Oh, it's very easy. I always tell people, don't think about it. When you go to a restaurant, sometimes they have this beautiful, nicely folded dumpling. Those people have a year's practice. I mean, in this recipe, it's very easy. You just gather them together, you pinch and dip. The key is you dip the wrappers in cold water so they will stick together. So you will get better in less than half an hour. You can fold enough dumpling for the whole family.
Yeah. You touched on this a little bit earlier, but I maybe go into it a little more in detail. There's a sense of balance, I think, in Asian cooking that I don't think we prioritize it as much in Western cooking. And you talked about the yin and the yang.
Yeah, I think you see Asian food, the traditional Asian cooking, the meat is as a flavor. It's not dominating the whole dish. And you don't see someone eat it like the steak. You think the steak dinner, that's like almost half pound of meat. My goodness, back in my days in China, that would be a meal for the whole family for one meal. You know, mainly the traditional Asian food is fresh vegetables, whole grain, and the seafood.
Yeah, and there's some, and as I was thinking about some of the harmony, and the sense of balance, one of the dishes, the soups that really appealed to me was this. You call it the soup of harmony.
Yes, the soup.
It's beautiful.
The way we see that is you think about the color. The dark color, the light color, you balance. It's not only just the taste, it's also the presentation. And if you want, you know, the cooling food, a lot of time you use some pungent spice, like a garlic and ginger to balance that.
No, it looks absolutely wonderful, and I can tell you right now it's one that I'm going to be trying fairly quickly because it kind of fits in with this season, you know?
Yeah, and so right now we're about to enter spring. I know in California, I feel like we're already in spring. In New York, in West, you still have snowstorms. So when you about, you know, there's the dishes in the spring, you're supposed to think about cleansing. You know, you mm-hmm. live through the whole, you know, winter time. But if you're still in winter, you need to eat food that is warming to you, you know, like a meat stew and mm-hmm. some, I have a dish, the sesame. Spicy sesame ribs. That's a great dish for the winter time or cold weather.
Oh, and the spicy sesame ribs, which you have a wonderful photograph of in your book. We have that posted up on my Facebook page.
Yes, yes. You know, this one is a little different. You know, you think about when you go to eat a barbecued food, you think about a lot of times the sauce. I could spend in a store for like half an hour to reading the ingredients. A lot of them have a very high sugar content or sodium. So that's why I had a very simple spicy sesame sauce recipe. So you prepare the sauce ahead of time. A lot of the time I make this at the weekend. I make a huge batch. So I use this through the week. You can use for stir fry, and you can use to marinate your ribs and the meat. And then after you marinate them, it takes like 10-15 minutes. You can cook this delicious sesame ribs.
I tell you, that's a wonderful idea, just making that sauce ahead of time and then just having it to use during the week. And as you say, you're not using, it doesn't have tons of sugar and or salt in it.
Yes, yes. And, you know, that's one thing I always, I do not like my, sometimes the barbecue sauce, they're so sweet. I don't want, you know, that's, mm-hmm. I'm not grown up eating the meat with such a strong sweet flavor in it. And it's not good for me. I don't like eat too much sugar in my diet. Either.
Well, I tell you what, it looks absolutely delicious in the photograph. You should talk about the book itself. I've sort of been talking around it, but let's describe for our listeners what this book is all about, Cooking with an Asian Accent.
Well, this book is really about my life journey from east to west. I grown up in China during the Chinese Cultural Revolution. And so through my teen and childhood, food was rationed. So I was always, you know, obsessed with food. I love to eat. And so when I came to this country, I really miss China. So that's when I started writing to become a writer. I write multiple genres, as you may know. And a few years ago, I wrote a book about my life. You know, my father was a very famous surgeon in a city called Wuhan, and he was accused as American spy, put in jail. So I wrote a book called Revolution is Not a Dinner Party, and that's about my life. You know, it's a fictionalized story about my experience. So that book won many, many awards, won 33 awards. People keep asking me to write a sequel. You know, it's interesting. As a writer, I just have a hard time for myself to sit down to write another fiction about my life. So instead, you know, because I always love food and I write cook. This is my fifth cookbook. I decided to write a nonfiction with a food, use this cookbook as, you know, my continue on my life journey. What's like after the Cultural Revolution? I went to college. This is story. This book kind of have a lot of the photograph of my pictures and the travel around China. I went to college. I was the only one in my family able to attend a college. Both my brothers were never able to attend a college because my father, they never able to get a higher education. They were much older. So that's, yeah, this book is really dear to me. It took me many years to work together. There's a lot of picture of my life journey from college time to
yes.
My journey to this, you know, today almost. Like I have a last picture was taken last Christmas, my whole family picture, yeah, when I was next on a cruise ship.
Oh, well, I'm telling you, I love that aspect of it. All of the photos that really kind of your life journey, as you say. Plus, then you had some, you have some wonderful food photographs in your book as well, which I always find appealing. I really enjoy having at least some great photographs of the food.
Yes, and they did a wonderful, you know, they did a very nice job. I love the photograph. And another thing is I really treasure this book is I have a lot of pictures of me as a little girl and
yeah.
also my son as a little boy. He's 20 now. And so, you know, in some way I'm compare both of our child, you know, the comparison of our childhood is so different. It's like two different worlds. There's a days I just can't imagine what I lived through and what his life is like today.
Totally, totally different. Ing Kopperstein, our guest today, former longtime editor of Martha Stewart's Body and Soul magazine, author of 15 books for adults and children. And great to have her along to talk about her latest book, Cooking with an Asian Accent. And it's I'm really enjoying looking through it. It's the subtitle is Eastern Wisdom in a Western Kitchen. And certainly inviting you to join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite Asian dish or a question about Asian cooking? We'd love to hear from you. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Jennifer Dargener, our on-air producer today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're talking with Ing Compestein about her great new book. It's called Cooking with an Asian Accent, Eastern Wisdom in a Western Kitchen. And certainly love to hear from you. Maybe you have a question about cooking, preparing Asian food, or maybe you've got some recipes or some tips that you'd like to share. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Let's see here. I wanted to ask you about another of the recipes, Ing, that we were posting on my Facebook page. It's tofu and cashew lettuce cups, and they look wonderful in the photo in the book.
Yes, and this is a wonderful dish for any gatherings or parties. It's beautiful. The presentation is beautiful, and it's very simple and easy to make. And you can make the cashew and the tofu. You still fry. You can put that make it ahead of time, and then when the guests come, then you assemble it. Or a lot of time, I invite my guests to help me to assemble this, and it would disappear in a minute. And I serve this as appetizer.
Well, it looks absolutely, and how. Not all that difficult to put together.
No, not at all. You buy the lettuce and you wash it, set it aside. With the filling, you can prepare it ahead of time, even like day before. So all you have to do is assemble it right before your guests arrive. Or when they get here, have a couple of good friends to help you to assemble it.
Yeah, I like that idea a lot. It's kind of fun to have. Well, in my case, I have a wife and a 10-year-old daughter, and we often do some things together in the kitchen, especially my daughter. It's fun to work with her in the kitchen. She enjoys it, and I think this is something that the kind of dish that she would have a lot of fun helping. And I think as you talked about. There are some great memories that are produced as a result of that kind of interaction with your children.
Yes, and I just think that's such a treasured time. Whenever I think back the time, and I really miss my son dearly. Now he's in college. Every time I think about it, it's those time we spend together cooking. We spend so much time together cooking. Some of the recipe, it was inspired by the time we spent in the kitchen, and he helped me develop it. So it's I can't imagine what we would do. When he come home, same thing. We go to the kitchen, we cook.
Well, let's go to the phones and Ramsey and Genesee Depot. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there. I was just getting so excited about the book that I had to call. We did something a couple years ago. We were homeschooling, and there was about four families that we read Where the Mountain Meets the Moon. And it's a saga of Chinese folklore, and there's recipes that are throughout the book. And what we did was had a party afterwards with all these families, and we cooked from the book. And actually, we're doing it again with another book, Knight's Castle, and having a party around that. And we found that what happens is, even if it's history or, just great literature, that it makes it more, pardon the pun, but more palatable for the children. And
yes,
they remember more.
Oh, great comment.
Excellent.
Ing, a comment from you.
Yes. If you go look me up, and I write many children's books, they all have recipes. in the story, my newest book, actually I wrote with my son, called Secrets of Terracotta Soldier. There's a recipe at the back about, you know, it's a story about the friendship between the little boy and not the teen boy, actually. He's 14 and with the Terracotta Soldier. And their adventure went to the Emperor's tomb, and then the Terracotta Soldier cooked the two special dishes from ancient time for this boy. So that's what I think is really important to teach the children. The first is the cultural aspect, also the food aspect. Instead of lecturing them, they should do certain things, and they, you know, what they should do, I think, is through the story, and is the best way to do. That's why I'm obsessed with food. Practically everything I write has something to do with food. All my story, I have another book called A Banquet for Hungry Ghosts, is designed as a Chinese menu. Each chapter is named after one Chinese dish. And there's eight recipes there. And I have many school. The student reads that, and at the end, they will have a Chinese banquet. And, of course, we have a scary ghost stories.
Oh, those are fabulous ideas. And, you know, with cooking, I think also the mathematics that's involved, you know, we always, when we bake a cake or whatever, we double it. And, you know, through fractions, and it's something that the muscle memory that, you know, it really means something to them. So thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, Ramsey.
Thank you.
That was a great, again, great ideas there. And I frankly think you could take your book, Cooking with an Asian Accent, and build a party around it as well, with people bringing different parts of the meal to the get-together.
See, that's how I normally host my Chinese New Year party. I always tell people I don't stay in the kitchen for days, like my mother used to do. Whenever she hosts a party, she would have to, you know, spend the weeks and clean the house. And so what I do is there are times I would send out the 10 recipes to different friends, have them take their pick. Everybody bring the dish. I will prepare a few main dishes. My job is clean the house, set up the place, and then we have a huge, nice party.
Oh, it sounds great. It sounds perfect.
That's an easy way to host a party, and it's fun. You're surprised what people do if they have a good food. They all work really hard, and I'm always surprised. You know, it's always nice to taste my food prepared by somebody else.
Well, Tom and Madison, thanks for calling.
Yes, I have a question. I'm on a gluten-free diet, and I'm just wondering if there is a way to cook that she's discussing that would be gluten-free. Okay. And I'll just hang up and listen.
Okay.
I didn't get a last part.
Oh, he was just wondering if there is a way to do Asian cooking gluten-free.
Yes. Actually, myself, personally, I have not. I rarely eat any white carbs. I don't eat bread, really, maybe once or twice a year. Asian food is one of the easiest way to go for gluten-free, because most of you can stay with a fresh vegetable. My, you know, every day is the fresh vegetable. I eat a lot of that, and the fruit, and protein, lean, healthy protein. I eat a lot of nuts and the fish, like in this... For example, the tofu and cashew lettuce cup is a wonderful example. You could have this for lunch and as an appetizer. And there's the few recipes we mentioned, the sesame ribs,
yeah,
and the steamed fish.
Yeah, all those would work for sure. Thanks again for that call. Darlene in Saginaw, Minnesota, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
I was lucky enough to get to China 20 years ago, and I've been kind of searching for something, but I didn't know what the name of it was. I think it's called bao. It's a round, kind of like a dumpling, and it's white.
Oh, baozi is the bigger version of the dumpling. This is a flour, you know, there's a different filling inside, correct?
Yeah. And I was just, I've never seen a recipe for that. I don't have internet, so I can't go online and look. And I was just wondering if there was one in your book, or if it's something that you could explain how to make.
Oh, the baozi. I don't have a recipe in the book. The reason is that's we referring to the last caller is most of the wrappers, the traditional way, is made with white flour, and in my mind, I don't feel they're very healthy. And so it's tasty, it's delicious. I will go to a restaurant maybe once a year. I will have a little taste. So, and the easy way, if you, there's a way you, years ago, I did this similar one. One thing is that you can simply go to any store who sell the pizza dough, get a whole wheat pizza dough. You start it for the wrappers. And you can make up your own filling. For example, in the green tea steamed shrimp dumplings, you can use that shrimp dumpling filling and use the whole wheat wrappers, the pizza dough, to use that wrapper and then steam it.
So
that's a healthy version. Yeah, the traditional way is really white flour, and sometimes they put sugar in it. So that's why the balls sometimes the outside tastes sweet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so but pizza dough, well, that's certainly readily available.
Whole wheat pizza dough or multi-grain pizza dough.
Okay.
And there you go. Good luck.
And then steam it. Yes, good luck. Have fun.
Thanks, Darlene, for calling. And we have some open lines we can get you on at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments. And Tom in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I grew up eating basically a European-style dinners, you know, meat, potatoes, and vegetables. They all tasted good, but they're all separate. The Oriental and specifically Chinese cuisine seem to blend the elements much better. And I'm curious how this developed. I'm assuming it has something to do with the relative ages of our societies and cultures.
That's a really interesting question. In China, when you go to somebody's home for dinner, if the guest has to struggle at a dinner table to cut the meat, that's a really, really no-no for the host. That's like they lost their face, you know, it's embarrassing. That means the host, the cook is not doing a good job. So Chinese believe it's really not right to somebody have to bring the knife and the fork and on the table to struggle and to cut the meal. That should be all done in the kitchen. That's why you see when you go to you eat a Chinese dish, the meat is all semi-sliced or cut to bite size. And when I first came to this country 23 years ago, my whole family took me to a steakhouse. I was really shocked when they served me a huge steak with a mashed potato. And then I was really thinking, what am I supposed to do? Do I supposed to cut the steak in front of my whole family? So then, that was a culture shock for me.
Very interesting.
And then also, when we, the stir fry is the one main cooking technique in Asian cooking. So the smaller you cut your food, the more less time required to cook it, and all the flavor will take less time for all the flavor to, absorb the sauce. It's more flavorful for the dish.
Yeah.
So that's why we all, shredded and cut the food in small pieces, and then we cook them together.
Yeah, there you go, Tom. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Stir frying, there is something I used to do a lot of, and I kind of got away from it, but I'm telling you, looking through your cookbook again, it's making me hungry to get back involved with stir frying. And it's really, as you say, there's the upfront work, the cutting, cutting and slicing, get all that done. But then the cooking itself goes pretty fast.
You know, that's in the beginning of my book. I have a section of shopping tips. I just think today we're so lucky. You can walk into the grocery store, have so many, pre-cut vegetables. All the vegetables is washed and clean. You can buy the bagged vegetables. When I was growing up in China, the vegetable is all muddy. I don't know if you ever see a Chinese vegetable market in the old days. So they were the picture showing that they just pile the vegetable on the street, and so you have to take it home, wash them in cold water, and that takes a lot of time. And my grandmother, my mother, would be staying in the kitchen for hours to chop them. So now I can simply walk into the grocery store, buy a couple bags of pre-washed vegetables, and if I'm in a hurry, I will buy some wild shrimp in the frozen section or fresh, and then I come home and I can do a stir-fry in less than 10, 15 minutes. If I have my sauce already made the weekend, and I can cook three dishes in less than half an hour.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, yeah. So I just, every time I walk into my kitchen, I just feel I'm just so lucky. You know, consider what my grandmother, my mother have to do to prepare a meal than what I have to do today.
You know, that. Let's go back to that sauce. You talked about that sauce that you use in the spicy sesame ribs that you make ahead. Let our listeners know what goes into that sauce.
Okay, so we have a garlic, we have a green onion, and a fresh ginger, and a chili pepper. I always use fresh chili pepper if I can find it. If not, you can use a dry chili pepper flakes. And a sesame seed, and toast it. You make sure you use the toasted sesame seed. If not, you can toast it in the oven yourself at 150 and low temperature. Toast it for 5-10 minutes. You have to keep checking it. Make sure you're not burned there. And then soy sauce, lemon juice, and the sesame oil. This is a really a sauce that would go with almost anything. Now, one thing I want to add here is I use a lot of sesame seed in my cooking. So, I get some of my protein from the sesame seed. Also, Chinese doctor believe sesame seed is really good for your skin and the hair. For, we talk about Asian beauty secret, and that's one of my secrets. I eat a lot of black sesame seed. That will keep the hair shiny and black. If you have a dark hair, the color hair, so eat a lot of sesame seed. It's good for you. And also, good for your skin.
Well, I don't want to sound like a chauvinist here, but I'm looking at your photo on your book, and your hair looks lovely, and you're in wonderful shape, and look, your skin looks lovely as well.
Oh, thank you very much. Very kind of you.
It's obviously your hints and your tips are certainly working in your case for sure.
And there's a couple other beauty recipe in the book. We have the roast there's a one soup with a roast petal in that.
Yes.
That was I was in Beijing. I was invited to teach at one of the international college, and I spent a lot of time at the Forbidden City and talking to, that was one of the secret recipe. It was given to me. Was they say, in old days, that's what the concubine in the Forbidden City, they will eat it, they would, eat the soup in the summertime, and the roast paddle. So anyway, there's a lot of little tips and the recipes through that. And then at the end, we talk about the mental pause and the Western. I have a lot of friends are going through that, and I always tell them, eat soy. And there's also a couple of the drinks, like dangui and the red dates. So Asian beauty tonic on page 22, 28. Mm. That's what I eat. Every time when I travel, when I came home, the first thing is I would make some of my secret soup. That's what my family called me, and I would eat this.
Well, we have Sharon in Cloquet, Minnesota with a comment, so let's go there. Sharon, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yes.
Hi.
I wanted to speak to the gentleman who is gluten-free and enjoys Asian food. That is my case also. I've had the opportunity to travel to China several times to visit my son and his family, and I've always enjoyed Asian food. I have discovered, that, first of all, that there are in the grocery stores several soy sauces that are gluten-free, and one is, it'll be just the soy sauce. You need to read the labels, of course, but tamari as a substitute for soy sauce,
right,
you can get that wheat-free. But also, I have gone online and just Googled gluten-free Chinese sauces or Asian sauces, and there are several companies that produce gluten-free sauces, and that's just been a wonderful discovery for me. And I use either arrowroot or cornstarch for thickening, which I think is the cornstarch, I think, is kind of traditional.
Yeah, yeah. Is that true, Ing?
Yes, there's a couple of tips here. If you worry about the soy sauce, you can totally. I don't use a lot of soy sauce. Sometimes when you want to flavor your food, I use a lot of fresh ingredients, ginger, garlic, and, you know, cilantros. You can have you look into a fish sauce. You know, you only need a couple drops of fish sauce. That can give you, you know, quite a bit of very strong flavor. So you can replace that instead of soy sauce. Tamari is a great choice. And so thickening the sauce, one thing I do is I use coconut milk, no sugar. You know, yeah. you can use, and also soy milk. I use that to the thickening. If I want a little light sauce, I use that. I really use the flour or cornstarch for my cooking. So yeah. It gives you a dish a very clean taste, and you don't have to worry about that you're going to burn that sauce.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Sharon, thanks for calling. I appreciate it very much. I want to give Ruth and Eau Claire a chance to get on here before we're out of time. Ruth, hello. Thank you for calling.
No.
Yes. Hello. My main comment is that, you know, the key in all of this is the wok. It is and we have a cast iron wok. It's the most used pan in our home. We can make a meal, or my husband's really the one, within like 15 minutes, like you said. You can make a wonderful meal with vegetables, meat, whatever, but the wok is a big factor.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. That's wonderful. So wok is great, and I have to confess, I rarely use my wok because, you know, I'm not a very large person. So the wok I can find here is all very heavy. Most of the time, you know. So I have a chef's pan, and basically, it's I can cook all kind of things in that. And one thing is, you just have a deep pan and the high quality, nice pan, and I use that to stir fry. I can make my soup in that and dishes with sauces. So it's like one pan can cook many dishes for me. Have a wok is wonderful too. If once in a while, if I'm going to do a lot of stir fry, I would bring out my wok. But other times, day to day, I just use my chef's pan.
Oh, very good. Ruth, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Ing, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I'm really looking forward to trying out those recipes in your book. And frankly, it's probably going to be this weekend, this coming weekend.
Thanks so much for having me. I had a great time.
Well, thank you. And the book is called, titled, Cooking with an Asian Accent. And the author, and the subtitle is Eastern Wisdom in a Western Kitchen. And the author is our guest today, Ing Compostine, and it's, it's pronounced Ing, it's spelled Y-I-N-G, just to let you know that, and Compostine, C-O-M-P-E-S-T-I-N-E, is her last name. And we have a link on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can get a direct link to the book itself and the recipes. We have three recipes that we've taken from the book, and we have them up, including the three that we talked about, the spicy sesame ribs with that sauce that she talked about, and the tofu and cashew lettuce cups, which I really like to want to try, and the green tea steamed shrimp dumplings. So all of those, they're wonderful food. Boy, it can really, you know, it can transport us to a whole different culture, can it? You know what else can carry us away? Well, an actual vacation. And we're going to hear next from Rick Seney of FareCompare.com, who is going to tell us who is going to pay more for airline tickets in 2014. Is it going to be you or me? How do we avoid being one of those people? Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.